This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are delighted to have Iris Chang with us. For a nation of immigrants, our inability to deal well with immigrants is pretty surprising, isn't it?
Oh, yes. And actually, it's if we don't actually find an effective immigration policy, I think that's going to really bode ill for our future.
As you wrote The Chinese in America, and as you told me the story, did you get a sense, a kind of eerie sense of the, now here's luck for you, law of unintended consequences of this very keen, I got the sense anyway, maybe I was just fantasizing, of time and again, something would happen with one intention and something quite different would be the result. For instance, these massive migrations of people who were peasants coming mm-hmm. out of China during terrible times mm-hmm. into America were just working like slaves, as you say, and their family getting unbelievably greedy and rich back home. It's just bizarre.
I was appalled, but also amused to see that. I mean, here you had people who were often working in menial jobs and, you know, sweating away as laundrymen, but their families,
for a pittance,
but they would stay because their families could live like royalty on the remittances sent home. I mean, quite literally, they were such aristocratic people as a result of this money that they could build, you know, armies to protect themselves and fortresses. Such was the value, of course, of the American dollar in China. But then you had entire regions like the Toishan region that used to be known for its entrepreneurial drive and its frugality, suddenly becoming these vast welfare states, and just society deteriorating into extravagant living and decadence.
I was surprised several times to see you say greed. Now, greed rears its ugly head probably through all of human experience. And that said, there were, over and over again, there was a sense of things just out of whack, that people would literally give their lives, that men would come and just have terrible lives and be pushed more and more into that by folks at home being greedy. And then, again, the Siamese twin, and at the same time, the exploitation in this country of people with greedy industrialists. That's another thread that seems to go through, that it's a challenge to all of us.
Yes, and in fact, we still see that kind of migration. Now there are people who are willing to risk their lives to go into cargo containers, and they're terribly exploited often here.
If they live to get here.
That's right. But most people do live to get here. Most of them do. Some of them actually gain citizenship and then become millionaires. But the stakes are very high, and you have a kind of a repetition of that pattern from the 19th century that now you have in different regions in China, people who are now living as aristocrats from these remittances. See, after the end of the Cold War, we began to see, you know, with formal resumption of ties between the U.S. and China, again, mass migration. You have people who are extremely wealthy, who are moguls, all the way down to the sweatshop worker who isn't supposed to exist here. And so it's just fascinating. But you know, for many years during the exclusion era, you didn't have many people coming. And now, once again, we have immigration patterns that resemble that of the 19th century.
We talked about democracy and the importance of voting and participating. But one of the other attributes is the rule of law. And for all the exclusion laws were, ill-conceived, they were at least, in a sense, legal. What I find interesting, and part of this comes from talking with Eric Schlosser, who's written a lot about migrant workers, and David Shipler, who's written about migrant workers, and the institutionalized exploitation of particularly immigrants, and particularly undocumented immigrants, I thought was a relatively new phenomenon. You document it going all the way back to day one, and my guess is, if I thought about it and looked at it, we would see it going back probably to
the
early settlements.
The original undocumented immigrants being slaves.
Well, slaves, indentured servants, though they were in some sense documented, but this continuing exploitation, which is illegal, and we know it's illegal, and it's going on all over the country. It's going on
all
in New York.
All over the world, really.
Right.
Yeah, well,
look at the Chinese slave trade, yeah. For example, in the 1800s, where the Chinese were often kidnapped and forced to work on the sugar plantations in Cuba or on the guano beds of Peru. That was horrific. That was worse than anything that had ever happened in the United States, where the Chinese still came voluntarily. The men did, at least, even if they were often badly treated once they got here.
Slave trade.
We're talking about the Chinese slave trade actually mainly occurred in South America until a Chinese-American, Yang Wing, who's mentioned in the Chinese in America, he helped bring an end to this slave trade by doing an investigation and led to the signing of treaties between China and Cuba and Peru. But these weren't Chinese men who were literally kidnapped and forced into slavery. Now, in the United States, they were not slaves. They came voluntarily. But there was once, in the American South, an attempt to try to replace black slavery with Chinese labor, which I found intriguing. I didn't know this until I started researching the Chinese in America. White plantation owners thought that maybe they could just replace black slaves with docile Chinese coolies, and they held a special conference in Memphis for this purpose. But then they found that once they brought some of the Chinese employees here, that they were pretty litigious people. And
good Americans.
They were good. They went the American way, and they hired interpreters to translate their contracts into Chinese to make sure they better understood them. They had their own attorneys, and if the plantation owners tried to treat them like slaves, they sued them.
And won.
Yeah.
This is still going on, and you talk some about the civil rights efforts of the Chinese community, as well as lots of other communities, and yet we still have these kinds of things going on. There's still people coming off boats legally and mostly illegally that are going into sweatshops, working in essentially, they're indentured servants, assuming that the contracts are being honored, even if they are illegal, that they're at the very least indentured servants.
Yes.
But this whole trade is illegal, and yet it continues. And it is widespread, and we have come to depend on it.
We've come to depend on it. And actually, their entire industries, the garment industry, other industries that really need this kind of exploitative labor. And it's very unfortunate. And that's not true, that's true not only in the United States, but in a lot of other countries as well. So there's a hypocrisy there, where it's illegal, yes, but the authorities are turning a blind eye towards it.
And it is also probably something that we will have to deal with in greater quantity as globalization becomes more and more an opportunity to exploit those who are exploitable.
It'll be very interesting in the next few years.
That's for sure. I remember vividly my mother telling stories of World War II era when she had friends who were from Korea who would come to visit. And her neighbors were ready to turn her into I don't know who you turn people into, but this business of people turning on their neighbors because they had friends who were...
The FBI is always reliable.
Oh, well, probably it would have been
the FBI. Was this during the 1950s?
This was actually during World War II.
World War II, and then following.
The sense that it was okay to rat on your neighbor because they had friends who you didn't know. Well, your story, this is not a happy story that you tell time and again, and yet you are also regularly telling all of the successes of individuals, if not the collective, as they came to terms with America and had the good news as well as the bad news.
Yeah, you see a balance between the struggle and also the great contribution and achievements.
You said in passing that education is an important part of that, and that's a very important part of your story, it seems to me.
Yes, I mean, the Chinese... regardless of their background, always revered education.
That's cultural, isn't it?
I think it's definitely cultural. And so we see early on, even before all of the well-known, contributions that the Chinese have made in high tech and computers and, all the stories about the Nobel laureates, we had some very early scientific contributions too. The Chinese, like inventing powdered milk or the birth control pill and a lot of other of these, contributions you wouldn't think of, or like pioneering the Florida citrus industry, by developing frost-resistant orange. These are things that we don't normally think of, but these are Chinese-American contributions to our culture.
We sort of went past that cultural attribute, but I think a lot of people have, you know, that's part of the stereotype, is that particularly Chinese are, you know, they're going to be the valedictorian, and they, you know, this is
the model minority image.
Yeah, but you tell stories that to me at least describe some of the origins of that coming out of the Manchu dynasty and why education is so important.
We're going to talk about that in a moment when we return with Iris Chang here on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell joins me in inviting you to be with us when we return.